Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's start off with some sad news. Donald Sutherland recently passed away at age 88. I think a lot of people will know him from his work in The Hunger Games and, I mean, a ton of movies, Clute and MASH and Space Cowboys and Invasion of the Body Snatchers and just a bunch of things. But
Animal House.
Of course, yeah. He was just such a fun actor to watch. He was really, really good at playing villains, but he could also bring immense warmth to roles when that was required of him. What are your favorite Donald Sutherland performances?
He was so incredible as Snow in The Hunger Games, and that's pretty recent, so it's hard to not bring that up. I always liked seeing him in bit parts, especially in comedies. He had a small role in Horrible Bosses, which was always it was just a fun thing to see him just randomly pop up in movies like that, because you don't expect someone of Donald Sutherland's caliber to take, a thankless role where he's only in the movie for basically 5 minutes,
Yeah. Do you remember him popping up in Beer Fest?
No, gosh.
Yeah, I was just looking at his IMDb and I saw that he had a small role in Beer Fest and I was like, what the hell? And I just looked at the YouTube clip of it and I was like, I can't believe Donald Sutherland did this. It's exactly what you're talking about. Another one of those where he is so far, his weight class, he's out hitting his weight class or whatever that term is.
Yeah. I mean, he did an episode of The Simpsons, which was fantastic. I mean, there was few things that he couldn't do, he was just one of those actors.
Yeah, I think my favorite performance of his is a pretty small role, but it's the remake of The Italian Job. He just has such a twinkle in his eye in that role that I really love. But I just wanted to shout out real quick, The Great Train Robbery. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say, one of the amazing things I think about him is that twinkle you're talking about, it could go either way too, because you mentioned him being great at being villains, but also having this immense warmth about him, and he could sometimes do that in the same role, especially with somebody like Snow. He's a character who projects this very calm, nice demeanor, and he has this disarming smile and personality about him, but he's also just a vindictive, conniving, evil dude, and so his smile could easily be one that was so touching and nice and also just extremely menacing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple other movies that people should seek out that have good Donald Sutherland performances. If you're looking for more examples of his work, The Great Train Robbery, I watched not too long ago for the first time and really enjoyed him in that. There's a Stallone prison movie called Lockup, where he plays the warden, that I remember pretty well. And then Cold Mountain, which I just watched for the first time, and I'll probably talk about on an upcoming Water Cooler episode. And Joe Wright's Pride and Prejudice, he was really good in that too. So RIP to Donald Sutherland, like truly a legendary actor who worked across so many different decades, and like his range was really, really wild. So rest in peace. Okay, let's transition into a couple of the more like traditional news items here. Do you happen to see, how's this for a transition, Brad? Did you happen to see the most recent trailer for The Penguin, the new Colin Farrell Batman show that's coming to Max?
Indeed, I did.
What'd you think about it?
I think it looks solid. You know, for a show that doesn't have Batman in it, at least as far as we know and as we can assume, I just can't imagine they're going to have Batman pop up in the show. Yeah. It looks solid. You know, like it's one thing to like pitch an idea of like, hey, I want to do a show about Batman villains, but there's no Batman, and it's like, oh, neat. But Colin Farrell is so good in this role, and this looks like a great kind of crime thriller that like I'm actually interested in it.
Yeah, and Kristen Milioti seems to be poised to be playing a really, really big role, and that's like huge for me because I've been a fan of hers for a long time, and it seems like she's really she really fits with the aesthetic that Matt Reeves created in his movie, and that seems to be ported over to what they're doing in this show. So I'm like, even if everything else is kind of disappointing about it, I'm excited that Kristen Milioti is getting a chance to like take center stage, so to speak, in a big show like this. So I'm intrigued about this, certainly. And I don't know, the marketing does make it seem like it's playing up like the next step in the, or the next chapter in the Batman saga or the Batman story or whatever it says in the text. So like maybe there will be a Robert Pattinson cameo or something like that. Really just watching this trailer made me want to see the Batman Part 2, which like I know is probably still years away or whatever, but man, I'm excited about that. Okay. Speaking of Batman, there's this new animated show called Batman Caped Crusader that is coming to Prime Video. I think the official news came out today that is coming out on August 1st, the release date. There's this big Vanity Fair article breaking down some character details and revealing some of the voice actors that are going to be in the show. I'm not going to spoil any of the actors here in case people want to go into the show surprised, but I did think one little nugget was worth talking about, and that is the way that this show is going to handle Two-Face. Did you happen to see this, Brad?
I saw a part of it, but I don't think I fully registered what the like full like spin. I know it's something unique, though.
Yeah, so we've seen the Two-Face character origin story in a bunch of different forms by now, but this show is taking a different approach. This time around, Harvey Dent is going to be a corrupt district attorney to start out, and he's going to like have faced off against Batman, I guess, in the courts or whatever, before he even becomes a supervillain. And then, to quote show creator Bruce Timm, when he gets his face disfigured, for the first time in his life, he actually feels empathy for other people. So it's like a reverse origin story for Two-Face, which is kind of an interesting take. I don't know.
So basically everybody knows that Harvey Dent turns into a corrupt district attorney when he becomes Two-Face. But what Batman the Caped Crusader presupposes is maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the take. Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of like, you know, this is the show that I think I want to say Matt Reeves has a hand in this as well, like as an EP or something. Maybe J.J. Abrams is also executive producing this. This is a show that's been in the works for a long time. And so I've been like interested from afar. Bruce Timm, who's one of the main creative voices behind Batman the Animated Series, is involved in this too. So like the quality of the people involved in this is very high. The list of the actors is very impressive too. But like, I don't know, hearing that they're actually going to be not quite so precious with the existing mythology and lore and stuff like that actually has me more excited than any of the involvement in any of these people, because like we've seen so many great shows over the past few years, peak TV and all of that, like it almost doesn't matter anymore because there's just like so much stuff out there that like there's not that really, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, even if the best people come together to make something, it can still disappear into the stream. Yeah. But by doing something like this where they're tweaking the mythology a little bit, that might actually help it cut through a little bit more. So I'm wondering if this is going to be the only character that they tweak, or if there are several villains or even Batman himself that they like take some really creative, wild story choices with. So fingers crossed for that. But are you going to be watching this show? Are you interested in it?
I'll at least give it a shot and see how it turns out. Yeah, I like all the people involved, and I do enjoy a man dressed up like a bat. So, yeah, let's check it out.
Okay, so from DC to Marvel, let's talk a little bit about a version of Blade that we never got to see. We spoke recently on this podcast about how Marvel's Blade movie has fallen apart yet again before it could even get to the starting line. And there had been some rumors floating around for a while about the potential setting for a version of this movie, and those rumors were new to me, so I just wanted to share it with our listeners here. So according to The Hollywood Reporter, a version of the film that was supposed to start shooting last year was set largely in the 1920s and featured Mia Goth playing a vampire villain named Lilith, who wanted the blood of Blade's daughter. And there was also a massive train set built for this movie, but apparently both of those ideas have since been scrapped because the movie is now going to be set in the modern day. And then the train set, weirdly, was reportedly going to be, I guess, passed along to a different Disney production altogether to use instead. So that's something there. But I don't know. I mean, what's your relationship with Blade, Brad? Like, do you really like those Wesley Snipes movies? What's your anticipation like for this new project? And what do you think about a version that we'll never see now that could have been set largely in the 1920s?
Yeah, the Wesley Snipes movies are a lot of fun. Blade Trinity notwithstanding, which is kind of stupid. But, you know, Del Toro knocked it out of the park with Blade 2. Blade 1's a lot of fun. Snipes is great as the character. Cool action. I just don't know how you can fuck up a cool character like Blade. Like, why are you trying to make this so much harder than it is? Like, Blade is cool by default. Just go make a fucking Blade movie, guys. Like, I don't understand. Like, why? Like, you really try to set this in the 1920s? Why? Like, there's no good reason to do that. And so, yeah, it's just, it's amazing, like, just how badly they're messing up all the goodwill they gained after the success of Avengers Endgame. And they're just, like, completely fumbling at every possible turn.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. I guess there is some, like, comics precedent for Blade appearing in the 1920s or something. You can read more about that in the article that we wrote that's linked in the show notes if you want to get, like, into the real nitty-gritty on that. But yeah, who knows? I think as of right now, Blade is still aiming for a November 6th, 2025 release date, but without a director, I have no idea if that's going to hold. So we'll see about that. Let's take a break, and then we have a lot more news to talk about in the back half of the show. All right, so the movie Megan, Brad, is we know that a sequel is in the works for that. But now, as of, I think, yesterday or maybe the day before, they announced the film is also getting a horny spinoff movie about an AI love bot. So,
of course.
This film is going to be called Soulmate with the number 8 in the title. And then it's about a man acquiring an artificial intelligence android to cope with the loss of his recently deceased wife in an attempt to create a truly sentient partner. He inadvertently turns a harmless love bot into a deadly soulmate. So, you know, like one of those stories. So what do you make of this? Are you like, how did you react to the first Megan? What do you think about, I think it's Atomic Monster, James Wan's company, and Blumhouse sort of almost going all in on Megan as a piece of IP? What do you think about all this?
So I liked Megan. I don't think it quite lived up to the hype that was generated from that trailer because they kind of gave away some of the best parts of the movie in the trailer, and it didn't necessarily go far beyond that, but it was pretty fun. And I do think that there's a lot of potential to dig into, you know, other similar stories involving advanced robots and things like that. You know, that's not necessarily anything new. And if you do something set kind of like within that world of Megan, you can have some fun there. I guess veering into like erotic thriller territory kind of makes sense too, you know, because there's obviously, you know, sex bots that exist now. So all I can say is if we're not gonna have a dude get his dick cut off by one of these AI robots, then what's the point?
I would not be surprised if that actually happens in this movie. Yeah, and I forgot to mention this is being framed as like a 1990s style erotic thriller, which is like a very different tone than something like, I don't know, like Black Mirror or something, which has like explored the AI android coping with a deceased loved one plot before.
Yeah, like this one's gonna be sexy.
Yeah. So I don't know. It might be complicated. I might be feeling some kind of way about this movie. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But Kate Dolan is directing this, and she previously directed an Irish folklore horror movie called You Are Not My Mother, which Chris and BJ both liked. So yeah, potentially exciting stuff there. More from the Megan universe. Speaking of growing universes, Nobody 2 is coming. So Bob Odenkirk starred in this movie called Nobody back in 2021. It basically was like, what if Bob Odenkirk had his own John Wick type of movie, basically?
Yes.
So now Nobody 2 is happening. And like, I don't know, I feel a little mixed about this. Timo Chianto, who directed films like The Night Comes for Us, and he directed some shorts in VHS 2 and ABCs of Death, is going to be directing this. So it's like a step up in terms of the director, I think. But and obviously Bob Odenkirk is coming back. I think Connie Nielsen is the only other actress that we know is coming back. She's going to be playing his wife again. But what do you make of this one?
I mean, I'm down to see Bob Odenkirk keep playing this character as long as he's willing to and as long as they have a good story. You know, there's some teases of it getting bigger, you know, outside of the first Nobody, so it wouldn't just be a one-off. And so I actually haven't seen anything of Timo's work outside of the short he did for VHS 2, but I watched a clip from The Night Comes for Us that Jacob shared in our Slack, and it was awesome. So now I need to go see that movie, and that got me excited to see what he does with Nobody 2, because that's a pretty, like, brutal action director to get for this movie.
Yeah, it's incredibly gnarly, like super violent, incredibly bloody. Like, even if you, I don't know, just kind of like loosely enjoy martial arts films or like the movies of Tony Jaa, for example, or something, if you throw on The Night Comes for Us, like, I think you better be prepared for something that is like really, really graphic.
Yeah. It's a little bit more intense than like something like The Raid or The Raid 2, you know, because those movies get pretty bloody and violent too.
Yeah, definitely. So production is supposed to start this summer, and the movie is going to be hitting theaters in summer of 2025. I don't know, I was just like not a huge fan of the original Nobody, so I'm kind of like, do we really have to come back for this? I like the idea of this director working with you know the sort of quality of folks that we're talking about here, but I just don't know about the story. So I don't know. I guess I'll reserve judgment. We don't really know what the plot is going to be. We know that Derek Kolstad, who wrote the first movie, is going to be coming back to write the script, and it's probably also going to have a little bit of that sort of John Wick, Atomic Blonde vibe, since David Leitch and Kelly McCormick's company 87 North is producing it. So. Next up, Lethal Weapon 5 may be happening with an unexpected director, and that director is Mel Gibson himself, Brad. Yeah. We could probably just move on with just boo as the entirety of our conversation on this.
And you know, but here's the thing too, it's like, it wouldn't be so hard to like maybe accept that he's still around and doing stuff if he like showed any sort of like remorse or like apology or effort to like, you know, rehabilitate himself somewhat, but he hasn't. So like, fuck off, Mel Gibson.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So like, let's put all of Mel Gibson and his incredible amount of baggage aside, which I mean, a lot of folks aren't going to be able to do. That's totally fine. Whatever. Just for the purposes of this conversation, let's set all of that stuff aside, Brad. So Mel Gibson right now is 68 years old. Danny Glover is 77 years old. Like, I'm not trying to be ageist, but
they are too old for this shit.
They truly, Danny Glover was 40 years old when he said, "I'm too old for this shit" in the first movie. And that was,
he's almost double that age now.
Almost 40 years ago. It's insane. So like, I don't know. We know that like Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise have proven that we can still get really top tier action entertainment when older stars continue to get after it in that way. But like, there's a big difference between seeing people like Tom Cruise and Keanu Reeves, who have been in that mode for a long time and have been training and all of that stuff, versus jumping back in on a franchise that ended in 1998.
It's been over 25 years since Lethal Weapon 4, and like, they already kind of felt like they were doing like a send-off for them at that time, especially with like that montage at the end with like all the pictures and like having all the cast members together and everything. Like people have been born and grown and now have children in the time since Lethal Weapon 4 came out.
Yeah.
you know, like somebody who was born in 1998 could star in a Lethal Weapon reboot right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, part of me wonders if this is ever actually going to come to pass. Like, there's been talk about a Lethal Weapon 5 for so, so long that part of me just wonders, okay, maybe this is just more hot air. But
the only way they could really conceivably do it is to take that Lego sequel approach and like have it mostly focus on Riggs and Murtaugh's kids who like of course become cops, you know, mm-hmm. and like maybe they like don't, you know, want to be partners even more than, you know, Riggs and Murtaugh initially and stuff. And so like you still have Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in it, but like in a supporting capacity. Like, I feel like that's the only real way you could make it work.
Yeah. Gibson's quote is, "I'm going to direct the fifth film in the Lethal Weapon series. Richard Donner, who did the other four, sadly passed away and he was a good friend. And he kind of tasked me with carrying the flag home on that one. So it'll be an honor for me to do that. Donner had gotten a fair way into writing the screenplay and we've used what was there. We kind of kept poking at it, working it, and I'm pretty happy with it. It's good. I had a lot of fun doing it." So yeah, we'll see about that. He also said, "It's funny, but it's also pretty serious too. It tackles a couple of hard issues, so I'm looking forward to it." I wonder what those hard issues are going to be. It doesn't really seem like the Lethal Weapon franchise is one that has tackled hard issues in the past.
So. I wouldn't go that far, because like I feel like the first movie, like, you know, I mean, Riggs is a fucking madman in that first movie, you know, and so like he's almost killing himself in the first movie, and so like I feel like as far as the characters are concerned, like they deal with some like pretty decent like drama and like trauma themselves. Maybe less so as they went on, like as we got into 3 and 4, you know, it leaned a little more into the comedic side and wasn't quite so serious. But I feel like they've done some serious stuff before.
Yeah, that's true. I was mostly thinking of like, you know, when you get Joe Pesci involved and like Renee Russo
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of loses its seriousness. But you're right. To be fair to the first movie, which is still very good, by the way, Riggs definitely has that sort of like a haunted Vietnam vet kind of thing going on. And yeah, there is that scene where he's like, he literally has a gun in his mouth and his own trailer or whatever out at the beach. But yeah, it's almost like the like Rambo or something in that way. Like the first Blood, the first Blood movie was actually kind of like an issues movie in a way. And then the franchise just kind of got out over its skis and a little bit more ridiculous as it went on. But yeah, anyway, so Lethal Weapon 5, we'll see if that actually ends up happening. I hope, I don't know, man. Like the trailer for Beverly Hills Cop Axel F came out recently. That movie is about to come out on Netflix. And I'm just like bracing myself for this idea of more Lego sequels from the 80s. It's just like, we're kind of like inundated with that in our culture right now. And I'm like, do we really need another one? Like Lethal Weapon 4 has so far escaped all of that. And like, you know, that those movies have their legacy and have their place right now. And like, is the idea of bringing that title back into the mainstream cultural zeitgeist really going to do Lethal Weapon a lot of favors? I don't know. It's just it's a weird one, but
yeah.
Okay. Last thing I wanted to mention real quick. Is some stuff about Andor season 2. So Diego Luna appeared at the, I think it's called the Ace Superhero Comic Con in Texas recently, and he was talking a little bit about season 2. And he said, I have his quote right here. He said, "I can tell you Rogue One is coming, so there will be characters that you will recognize. There will be cool stuff. For those who love Rogue One, this season is going to be very special. It's going to be fascinating to go straight to Rogue One after watching the second season, because you will see Rogue One from a different perspective." And then the playlist also is reporting that Ben Mendelsohn is going to be coming back to play Imperial director Orson Krennic, who he played in Rogue One. So he'll be showing up in Andor season 2. So what do you think about this? I remember that you liked Andor quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I loved Andor. I love Rogue One. And it makes sense, you know? I mean, there are certain characters who obviously could have crossed paths before Rogue One. I sincerely doubt, you know, we'll necessarily be seeing someone like Jyn Erso or something like that pop up, since a key part of Rogue One is how, you know, her and Andor don't know each other and are being forced to work together and don't trust each other and all that jazz. So unless it's like a tangential thing where like she happens to be like in the same place somewhere that Andor was and they just didn't know it. But, you know, it seems like we're kind of like pushing things at that point. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense for Krennic to be around because if he's, you know, a director in Rogue One, then he's obviously been around for a while and clearly has been behind a lot of Imperial actions that would, you know, prompt the rebellion to try and shut whatever they're doing down. So yeah, I mean, I have so much, you know, faith after how good that first season of Andor was that like, I'm just down for whatever for the second season.
Yeah, I've said this before. Part of the reason that I loved Andor, I mean, aside from like the spectacular writing and direction and production design and acting and pretty much everything about it, was because it technically serves as a prequel to a prequel, but it felt like its own story. It wasn't like overly interested in referencing familiar things. And now that the gap is closing between Andor and the beginning of Rogue One, part of me is like a little apprehensive about a potential increase in Easter eggs and things of that nature that I'm generally pretty allergic to. But Tony Gilroy has earned my trust so far, so I remain excited to see what he does with the show, even with my suspicions slightly raised because of comments like these. But you know, I think in the lead up to the first season of Andor, there was a lot of talk about like, oh, K2SO, Alan Tudyk's character from the movie, is not going to be in the first season of the show or whatever. And like, honestly, I kind of like forgot about that character as I was watching Andor season one, because everything else was so good that I just like didn't need him. But now I'm guessing he's going to show up, and then and Mendelsohn's going to show up. And so like, I don't know, maybe if you throw that in, those guys in, throw Donnie Yen maybe back into the mix or something like that, Jimmy Smits or whatever, like, I don't know, maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, with Gilroy being able to sort of handle all these different balls in the air. And he seems like he's pretty allergic to like the hardcore, wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of, Star Wars style of storytelling too. So that's helpful. It gives me a little bit of hope, but, all right. Anything else, Brad, that we didn't touch on here that you wanted to mention before we wrap things up?
Jiminy Glick is back.
Jiminy Glick. Okay, so tell people about Jiminy Glick who might not know.
I mean, if you don't know Jiminy Glick, what you need to do is you need to go on YouTube and you need to look up clips of Martin Short as Jiminy Glick. It's a character that he portrayed in the 90s. He is a bumbling, silly celebrity interviewer who is charmingly rude and stupid and hilarious, because it's a character that Martin Short really leans into. He puts on this hilarious voice where he'll get down and talk like this to somebody, but then he also has a question where he wants to talk to you with an inquisitive nature. And I love watching him play his character, because there's obviously good writing, but there's also an incredible amount of like improv that he does, because he's interviewing real celebrities, actors, filmmakers, and he has prepared questions, but like based on their answers, he also improvises responses. And so like you get these natural reactions from people like Steven Spielberg and stuff, like laughing at Martin Short as Jiminy Glick. And it's just hilarious. And every now and then, Martin Short brings him back. And apparently Jiminy Glick is going to be guest hosting Jimmy Kimmel Live later this week. And so leading up to that happening, apparently they're showing clips where he's been quote-unquote warming up by doing celebrity interviews again, and they just debuted one last night where he interviewed Bill Hader, and of course it's hilarious, and Hader tries his best to keep a straight face but can't help but crack up when they start talking about Lorne Michaels. And yeah, man, it's just I love this character so much.
It's so funny. So yeah, Jiminy Glick was the lead. This fictional character was the lead of a show called Primetime Glick that ran from 2001 to 2003. And I remember the show being on, and I didn't like, I this is one of those, like, I didn't know how good I had it kind of things.
Yeah.
Because I skipped over, I like didn't really pay attention to it at the time. And then now, like in the years since, I've grown to appreciate Martin Short and his comedy so much more. And I've tried to go back and find those episodes, but they're not streaming anywhere. And there's like a lot of YouTube supercuts and stuff like that, but it's not complete. So I was wondering if you have ever found like the full, I don't know, episode runs or whatever of Primetime Glick anywhere. Do you know anything about that?
No, I've been looking. The best I've found is like Reddit has a pretty like decent collection of links to find episodes and stuff like that. But even then, it's far from complete. The best, I guess, like fairly easy to track down version of like what he did aside from the random YouTube clips is there was a DVD released that was the best of Jiminy Glick that when it was back on Comedy Central. And then there's also the movie is not great, but there's a movie called Jiminy Glick and La La Wood that they did in 2004. And it weaves a narrative throughout, but it still has like a bunch of celebrity cameos and him doing like interviews and stuff like that. So yeah, those are the two easiest ways to like get a hold of things essentially. But yeah, I wish someone would figure out how to get like streaming rights or something, or like a complete series release, because yeah, I would love to have that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I will definitely drop the link to the Bill Hader Jiminy Glick interview in the show notes if people want to check that out directly. All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.